When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Dr. Mari Swingle. She has written a book called iMinds, How Cell Phones, Computers, Gaming, and Social Media Are Changing Our Brains, Our Behavior, and the Evolution of Our Species. This is a fascinating interview, a fascinating book. You need to get the book. You need to listen to the interview. You need to rethink your take on technology, it seems to me. We talk about directional versus correctional therapies. We talk about iBabies and about relationships and the whole idea of mediation. We talk about lifestyle advertising and Hollywood and gaming and how all of these things are kind of affecting, you know, who we are and what it means to be human. And Dr. Swingle talks a lot about this idea of rewiring as kids and its children, you know, with being sort of mediated by the screen and by the image constantly. And what is this actually doing to who we are and where we're heading? And it's not just a conversation in a book about children either. It's about adults and how we behave and relate to others as well. So buckle up. I think you're going to really enjoy it and start paying attention to the, quote, fine print of the research, close quote. Dr. Swingle and her book, iMinds, coming up. DavidPeckLive.com for more information and access to other podcasts, rabble.ca. If you would like to get a copy of my book, Real Change is Incremental, available on Amazon. And if you'd like to book me for an event coming up to speak or to do a live podcast on stage, please get in touch with me through the website, davidpecklive.com. And wait for it. iMinds and Dr. Mari Swingle next.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by another very special guest here with us today. Dr. Mari Swingle is here to talk about, I think, a whole lot of things, but most importantly, I think, her new book, iMinds. Dr. Swingle, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure.
So you are a psychoneurophysiologist, and I say that with a little bit of a smile just because I'm not quite sure what it means. Can you help us out with that a bit?
Sure. It's kind of a blend. It's an applied branch of psychology, essentially.
Okay.
But we're working with a branch of neurology as well, which is brainwaves. So we essentially work with the EEG. Electroencephalography, if you want another one to chew on.
Yeah, I'm going to affectionately refer to it as ECG, if that's okay.
EEG.
Oh, sorry. So I can't even get the acronym right. So it's, you know, so take it from there.
I have to look at your brain then.
That's right. I think, can we hook me up right now? You know, maybe do a study while we're actually going through this interview. So what exactly then do you do when you are sort of, it sounds to me like you're kind of bridging the gap almost between mm-hmm. maybe psychology, or maybe not bridging a gap, but actually building a bridge between psychology and neurology.
I believe so. I think this is the, you know, no pun intended, the wave of things to come.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of discussion now on top down and bottom up.
Mm.
But for example, when people come to us for intakes, they have that option. And And when we talk about bottom up, when a client comes in, of course they fill out all the legal forms, but they don't say a word when they sit down on my couch or at the computer. And we literally hook up the brain and see what the brain is telling us in terms of efficiency and inefficiency, and then what individuals with their relative profile tend to be experiencing. So we can see a predisposition to states of anxiety, which is correlated with a brain that can't tolerate stress. This is also a predisposition to self-medicating behavior, which is a polite way of saying addiction.
Right.
We can see propensity to learning difficulties, and ADHD is a big one. But in terms of what we're looking at, there are 14 different sites on the brain that can be responsible for the same set of symptoms. So we get in with an amount of detail that pen and paper tests can't show us. And also, if the client just shares a symptom, we know what they're experiencing, but we don't know at a deeper level why. So again, this is one of the reasons why, for example, in depression, many psychiatrists are prescribing this, prescribing that. Well, if this one doesn't work, we'll try another
right.
one. It's because they're affecting the wrong brain region. And when we go in with the EEG, we can see which brain region is affected. I mean, I'm obviously biased because it's my profession, but we get precision that nobody else does.
And is this about sort of heading these issues off at the pass, as it were? In other words, so we know that you have a propensity towards X, Y, or Z. Let's, you know, get you into some sort of therapy or into some sort of, program that's going to help ultimately with that addictive behavior or sleep disorder or whatever the case it might be.
We have to be really, really careful about that, and especially with children. I talk about direction versus correction a lot when I'm working with younger folks. And when we look at the brain, what we're seeing are liabilities. It doesn't mean that it's expressed itself. So this is the field of epigenetics. When somebody knocks on our door and wants an appointment, we know something has expressed itself. Otherwise, they wouldn't be coming to us. So if we find something in a child whose parent brings them in just for curiosity, we go through the whole assessment, but we also look at whether it's expressed itself. One of the things I talk about in the book is the difference between drive and addiction. And quite frankly, they're identical. And if the precise example I have are Olympic swimmers, and if you look at Phelps, wow, I mean, it's a personification of exactly what I've been talking about for many, many years. So if you direct a child towards something exceptional and keep the brain and the body, for that matter, very, very occupied, you are going to have excellence like you would not believe. That said, if you don't direct the brain and that child finds street drugs, you have the worst addict on the planet.
Right.
So, you know, it's a dance between the two. And it's very, very delicate.
Well, it's really interesting. I'm just going to read, by the way, the site for my listeners is Dr. Mari Swingle. That's Dr. Mari Swingle, Swingle.com. Or search just her name and the book, I-Minds. Quote, engaging and entertaining yet scientifically rigorous, this extraordinary book is an indispensable look at a revolution where the only constant is change. I love that, by the way. Food for thought about which aspects of technology we should embrace, what we should unequivocally reject, and the many facets of the digital era that we should now be debating. This is your survival guide for the digital era, close quote. Now, as a young dad, well, I'm not so young, but I have an 11-year-old and a 9-year-old. Very relevant to me. As I read through your book, the subtitle here is How Could I Not Pay Attention? How cell phones, computers, gaming, and social media are changing our brains, our behavior, and the evolution of our species. It sounds very doomy and gloomy.
Well, it can be.
Yeah,
it
for sure.
It has to be, but it can be. And what I like to talk about is essentially we're talking about overconsumption of screen-based technologies, and we're talking about non-mitigated.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, technology is here to stay, and I really, really hate it when people just get all negative. It's not all negative. Many applications are fabulous, but we know about the good stuff. What we need to do is look at the subtle things and the really overt things that pull us in a really negative direction. And I'm extremely concerned with children in development because you don't get a second chance. You know, once the brain rewires in a negative, you know, techno way, you have problems, and they tend to be behavioral and scholastic.
You talk, I love the way you say at one point in the book, it just made me kind of smile. You say, you know, come to our office and we use technology really well here. You know, it's, we've got lots of it, right? I mean, you're hooking me up to wires, my brain up you know, I mean, that's, you know, you don't get much more technological, I suppose, than surgery or maybe flying.
And you're in front of a screen.
And you're in front of a screen. There you go. Could we be more ironic and paradoxical? So is this about that bridge? Is this about the balance? Is this about saying yes to some things and no to others?
Precisely. And gaining the knowledge, one of my key motivations for writing this book was to start an open and honest debate. Hmm. I get very, very upset at the industry and apologies to some fractions of the media for just running with information that may or may not be true. There are so many red herrings out there. If you look at the headlines of, you know, gaming is good for you, improves geolocation and spatial, you know, it goes on and on. And then you get to the fine print of the research and that secret language of statistics that many people don't read anymore, you find a very, very different picture. And many of us in the profession who do read the secret language get very frustrated with how much time we spend, you know, qualifying our research against the headlines and against a tech-funded perspective. The truth is in the middle. I like to say, if your kids enjoy gaming, by all means, have them game. But let it be one of the many, many things they do.
Right.
And our problems arise when that's all they do, and it's used as an electronic babysitter.
Right, I was just going to say the iPad becomes a babysitter.
Yes, yeah. And development, that handicaps a child socially for life. And behaviorally as well.
So would you say as a doctor, as an academic and so on, that you're most concerned about the relational implications? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know where you want me to start on that.
I mean, so many, right? You've got kids with students. You've got them with their brothers and sisters, their moms and dads, their friends, their families, and so on. If their relationship is only to a screen, there's...
Well, let me start in the title.
Yeah.
And I call them iBabies. Again, there was direct marketing until I think it was the American Pediatric Society went, whoa. So essentially medicine is chasing
advertising. Oh, the baby. Yeah, you just made me think of the baby Einstein videos that were so popular for a few years.
And touted, just like Luminosity, touted for all of their great learning abilities and cognitive function. And it was exactly the opposite. Children learned 6 to 8 words less per hour that they were watching it. Hmm. Same thing with Luminosity. It's completely debunked. They've had to pay, I believe it was $2 million to the American Board of Trade for false advertising.
Wow.
But they're still going. They've just changed the wording in their advertising. But let me get back to kids in the cradle. And the first 3 years of life are absolutely critical for what we call attachment. Now, this is a really popular term now, but what attachment means is brain wiring for social dependence. And I mean dependence in a positive way.
Right, okay.
All babies are dependent, whether it's on breast milk or food or, you know, same thing at that point. But if a child needs to be touched, sung to, and made eye contact with for all of these brain systems to wire, if we don't do that, it doesn't wire or it doesn't wire well. And we know this emphatically from Latin adoption. So whether they're children out of Eastern Europe many years ago or little baby girls out of China that essentially were left in orphanages on their backs in cribs for 8 months or so without all that parent-infant or caretaker interaction, they're extremely developmentally and socially compromised. Because those systems didn't wire. We call it neuronal Darwinism. So essentially, if pathways are not engaged, they don't engage. and it affects every single relationship thereafter. Bottom line is, if you had a really snuggly, cooey, tickly babyhood, you're going to be a really good friend and a really good partner. If you didn't have that, states of fear and anxiety with social interaction become dominant. And I can go through each and every stage. When we get into younger children, again, if they're on screens, they're not looking at their caretakers or even their friends. And there are a couple of really interesting studies out there that are showing that children are developing what I call autistic-like characteristics without being autistic.
Right.
So essentially, they don't have any of the neurology that would tell us that this is a that they are autistic or have autism. And what is being found is we are losing the ability to read facial cues. We are losing the ability to determine voice prosody. And if we look into texting and things, I mean, the little emojis and the winky faces and smiley faces, I mean, they're all great, but the side swipe, haha, I've got to put some puns in here,
right.
Is that we're losing our ability to interpret prose or text without these emotional guidelines or subscript. So it really, really interesting times. There's a fellow named Chatfield who's written a book, which is, I'm sorry, I forget the title, and he's all pro. And we have to read some of his stuff. He's calling it a new language.
Yes.
And, you know, the elder should get with it. I mean, there's some truth in that.
Sure.
And this is what I want us debating. It's like, okay, is this the way it's going, that we just write differently? Or is there a social developmental crisis going on in that we can't communicate face-to-face and our brains can't interpret anymore? The truth
yeah.
is somewhere in the middle.
I mean, I think, you know, I don't know if you would agree with this or not, but I think human beings have a tough time communicating face-to-face, period. I really do.
That's what adolescence is for.
Yeah.
And
then throw these devices in, the ubiquity of the screen, it's just going to add to that problem.
Bingo.
It seems to me.
Yeah.
So it's not building you up. It's kind of breaking it down, or I guess you would say mediating it, I suppose.
Well, yeah. If you have a digital mediator, these skills don't develop.
Mm.
And adolescence, I talked about early childhood. Adolescence is the second great phase of development, wherein the frontal lobes are in massive development, and this is, you know, the emotional regulation that's going on. And most adolescents are extremely awkward, not only with the opposite gender, because this is when they're learning the rules of social sexuality, but you have to go through that awkward phase because it's setting you up, again, for future interactions. This is also where whether we're going to be introverts or extroverts is confirmed. And again, there's nothing wrong with being an introvert. And we have another social attack on that. We're calling it social anxiety and giving youth pills now. No, nothing wrong with being an introvert. Many, many people are very, very happy, you know, alone in their own company or gathering in small groups. And there's a huge difference between being alone and being lonely.
Mm.
Catch, when you go on devices, as opposed to finding your inner introvert self at that point, that again will affect your social development. So, fascinating stuff on this.
It really is. Just this morning, I was looking at the news on my device, and I honestly, I didn't even think of our interview today, but I said to my wife, Elizabeth, I said, you know, I wish I enjoyed reading news more on my iPad. I'm a bit old school. I've asked my friends. I'm a lot old school. So I still like the newspaper. I like to be able to write in a book on the margins and underline and so on. But this morning, CBC, back to school, how young is too young for a cell phone? Mm-hmm. And I'm quoting a mother of an eight-year-old, I'm totally against it. Kids should just be kids, says the mother of an eight-year-old. Really interesting article, and I think the timing is pretty interesting, too, for us and our conversation. Is there, I've got so many questions, Dr. Swingle, but are you in a way, and I think you are, advocating for more play?
Hugely so.
Yeah, yeah. If a 5-year-old knows how to add 2 and 2.
No, in fact, a lot of the literature, primarily out of Northern Europe, that if you delay what we refer to as formal education until 7, children do substantially better, have less anxiety, and this goes throughout the school system, where essentially early kindergarten was a war effort to essentially babysit kids so moms could join the workforce while dads were fighting.
Right.
And we kind of kept to it. So don't get me wrong, you want to read your kids, you want to have them gain curiosity for numbers and letters and words and all of that, but the formal teaching should really be held off until much later. I think, again, to pseudo-quote from the book, but, you know, I say something to the effect is there's absolutely no positive gain to a child coming home knowing that the color red is the color of fire trucks and apples and things like
right.
that. But there is a lot of positive to a child coming home with a sleepy smile and red paint under their fingers.
Well, there's something, I think, I don't know what it is, but I mean, I work in development, so when you go to a donor and you ask for money, they want to know about tangibles, they want results, they want, what are our indicators? So, you know, very similarly, when a kid comes home from school with a report card, if they get an A, that's tangible. If they can add, that's tangible. Mm-hmm. But if they come home and they're humming a new song, you know, I mean, I remember speaking at an event once, a bunch of bankers, and I said, so, any other liberal arts grads in the room? And I put my hand up, you know, 2 degrees in full. I was the only guy of 200 people with my arm up.
Yeah.
And there was a part of me that, and of course, big laugh, and it was great, and I was able to use that as a launching point for a further point that I was trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder sometimes if we're focusing way too much on, you know, results.
Hugely so.
You know,
and what are we measuring?
What are we measuring? Yeah, that's the question, right?
Yeah. Again, I could go on about this, but have your children play. One of the major issues is we're paying so much for childcare now that we want results. We want something tangible. And my very strong attitude there is you're paying for somebody to take care of your child, mind your child, engage with your child, supervise your child while you are putting a roof over their head. In terms of, you know, early childhood education, I think should be banished, so to speak,
right.
until age 7. Yeah. And again, there's far too much developmental variation in young children. It's not, you know, we have our textbook measures of you should
sure.
walk at this month and talk at this month and whatnot, but there's incredible variation. Not to mention that in groups of children in a scholastic year, you are going to have 12 months variation in development. And some of the earlier work on ADHD, when they started looking at it, they universally found that the children with ADD or ADHD were late summer babies. So essentially, they had 8 to 12 months less development than the other kids. So there wasn't anything wrong with them in terms of attention spans. Just in a little life of 6 years or 5 years, you're dealing with a fifth of a lifespan. They were younger. They weren't ADHD. They were younger.
So how does the parent compete against, you know, lifestyle advertising, mm-hmm. Hollywood, the pornography industry, the gaming industry, multi billions of dollars worth of, you know, the free market, and I use that in quotes. How do you compete against that?
Very, very difficult to do so. And I do.
And oh, hey, how do you compete against that and not come out looking like an idiot or the moron or boy, you know, yesterday, two boys over playing with my son and one of them said, oh, your dad's so cool. 'Cause I was sort of, I guess, giving them some freedom and,
yeah.
you know, heaven forbid that I wasn't, you know, putting rules up and drawing a fence around them. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
and this young guy thought that was just the greatest thing. And so mm-hmm. how do you do that? And still,
stay cool.
Yeah, that's right.
yeah.
And still hopefully attend to your kids, you know, development.
Yeah, well, what I share with a lot of, I can't tell you how many times I have a parent sitting on my couch lamenting of this, that, and the other. And I say, you're right. And do you know how many parents sit on my couch with the same problems? Now, I can't put you together because of laws of confidentiality, okay? But you're out there.
Right.
And get old-fashioned, okay? Find...
Sorry, say that again. Get old-fashioned?
Get old-fashioned.
Okay, I'm getting that made up on a T-shirt.
Okay.
And we'll share the profits. How's that?
Perfect. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. But essentially, what you want to do is find the parents in your kids' class, or the parents on the block, or in the neighborhood, who have equal concerns, and get together. And so, for example, if you don't allow gaming in your house, they don't go, to Amir's house, and then they game all day.
Right.
And your house is not the cool house because you won't allow gaming. So you get together with parents who have the same type of philosophies. Now, let's not forget parents as well, okay? Romance is dead in many, many marriages or partnerships with young children.
Well, I was just going to say, this isn't your message, your book, I Minds, is not just for kids. This is for all of us. This is a kind of a wake-up call for all of us to not only start speaking about it, but also to start kind of acting about it. And maybe, you know, as you say, you turn off your devices after a certain time, and you know, that's one of the things you've done. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly trying
and
to
it's
do.
Hard
it is hard it is yeah. hard but I think it's important for the listeners to know this book is not just about, you know, how to police your kids.
No,
this is about what's happening to us culturally, as globally. Yeah,
very much so. Yeah, I don't know whether you want me to continue on that thought.
I totally do. Yeah, no, that whole idea of, because I want to be a cool parent. I mean, come on.
Okay, when you over control your kids, a lot more of your time is spent policing. The other is, children do not learn to negotiate and renegotiate rules and behavior, which is extremely important. But you also don't have your time. And if you get back to old-fashioned parenting, when, you know, a big gang of kids is in somebody's backyard, or God forbid, down at the park unsupervised, okay, this gives parents opportunity to tend to many things, including each other. And check local statistics. It is not true in every neighborhood, but if you look at the majority of local statistics, the world is actually safer now than it was in the Leave It to Beaver age in the 1950s.
Right, right.
And we, again, media, things do go wrong, and they go terribly wrong. But when it happens, it's blasted everywhere, which makes you feel that there's a pedophile and a rapist in every park. Mm. The other is, when children play and negotiate play, they also learn boundaries of danger. Which many games are taking away. This impulsive, this is the actual connection with ADHD and screens and gaming, is children do not learn physical boundaries. I don't know what your age is, but for those of us who are a little bit older, remember the high swings in park? In the park, we had the low swings and we had the high swings.
Yeah, sure.
And
yeah,
we all
of course.
Knew when we were ready for the high swing.
Right.
Not necessarily because our parents would tell us, but because we had learned the rules of the low swings.
Right.
There are no more high swings. And the reason for that is, you know, if you get on, a high swing on a game and you fall off, you get a redo. You get on a high swing in a park and you fall off, you break your arm.
Right.
So, you know, there are many, many, many stages to learning, including the learning of danger and also learning the rules of emotion. Essentially what hurts other children and what hurts self.
Do you think it's still too early to tell what the real implications of all this are going to be? You know, I mean, here we go with Pokemon Go and the madness of that, and it's pretty much, I just got back from Southeast Asia. I mean, it's everywhere. It's that's just one simple thing, you know, in this sort of crazy digital age that we live in. You know, it's still pretty new, right? I mean, we don't really know, I suppose, what the bigger implications could be. What's this going to do to the workforce in 30 years?
Well, I'm going to go quote directly from the book. We are in a live social experiment, and we don't know the outcome.
Mm.
But it's not a bunch of, you know, lab rats, okay? And my generation is the last generation on this planet that knows what the world was pre-iTech. And we're scared.
Right.
And we're called a bunch of Luddites, unfortunately. But if you, how many generations of individuals do you need who have compromised social interaction skills, including lessened ability to read facial cues, do you have until you change world culture? Okay, like if you really want to get creepy, think Borg.
Yeah, sure, okay? Sure.
The good news is I'm talking about this. Many other people are talking about this. And I think if we listen to unvested interest, okay, of course I want you to buy my book. Please buy my book.
That's
okay?
Right, yes.
But I am not a, you know, a tech company, which is, you know, when companies get too big, they're all for profit and lose perspective on some of the other things. The other is many people really believe that they're not doing any harm. But bottom line is, the good news is I think we're in a conversation, and I am really, really hoping if enough of us talk about this, enough of us go, wait a minute, when we see these extremely positive and extremely negative headlines, and we look in the middle, that maybe we can learn to embrace positive technology and use it as the magnificent tool it was designed to
right,
be, but
right.
as a tool, not a replacement for many of the things that humans do. Then we're going to be okay. But, you know, we have 8-10 years to get this job done.
So are you an advocate for, how do I phrase this question? So I guess, so my kids are of an age now where, you know, we're 9 and 11, they don't have their own phones yet, but there's enough devices in the house. We don't have filters. You know, we watch, we're careful, my wife and I, about the movies that we watch together as a family. We try to watch them as a family. I'm a huge film buff. I'm about to step into the Toronto International Film Festival. I love movies. I'm quite liberal when it comes to the films I see and so on, and want to share those with my family and my kids, but at the right time. So I don't think I don't think Grand Theft Auto is I don't think my son's ready for it yet. I don't think, or maybe he never should be ready for it. So I guess I'm kind of teasing this out as a parent who's sort of dealing with this right now as we speak. Is it about filters? Is it about saying absolutely not? Or
anything
is it
you would with anything else?
Because
you know,
isn't the reality they're gonna get access through their friends. I mean that's sort of how I see it. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah. You know, safety before privacy is one of the big ones. Again, many parents are caught in the trap of having their children accusing of them of spying on them and all these things. And if the tail's wagging the dog, it's reversed. A take back parenting.
Right,
You know, in the good old days when we had landlines, you know, whether we were up to sneaky things or, you know, we were talking on the phone in the living room. And when we wanted to get sneaky, you know, we went out behind the schoolyard and stole kisses and things.
Right.
That's perfectly, you know, natural behavior. You actually want your kids to explore a little bit of deviance. Now, And know when it's gone too far and they need to turn
right.
back.
Well, I think, you know what? That's kind of how I feel about the film. I want my kids to become literate
mm-hmm.
in mm-hmm. when it comes to media. I want them to be able to say, no, I don't want to watch that film because of this.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to play that game because of this. It makes me uncomfortable. Or it's crossing a line.
Yeah. The catch is, and I'm going to get into the science a little bit.
Please.
Is there something that we call the pull? That when we're sitting in front of the screen, we get pulled in through the protection of the screen, meaning we feel a little bit distant, so we don't feel in danger. And curiosities that we would have in face-to-face or, you know, normal life, our stop points are at different places. Okay, so if you look at, I was talking about stealing a kiss in the back of the schoolyard, you know, versus sexting or cybersex. So people will explore aspects of their personality, adults, that they'd never do otherwise, and they can develop these alter egos. That's a whole other story. But in terms of children, they're going places with this extreme curiosity where their pull-out point should be a little bit earlier.
Mm.
And that's where parents come in. Now, I'm not pro-porn. Don't get me wrong, but... Your kids are going to see it. It's going to pop up,
Sure, of course.
But if you're around, okay, you know, you can parent, whether, and parenting choices, there's so many. You can be a really severe parent, okay, and say, no, absolutely not, that's evil, okay? Or you can be a moderate parent and saying, yes, there's an industry of sexuality, or I mean, you can choose, you know, parenting styles don't change. And that's a very, very individual decision. But you need still to be there. And getting dark and creepy, again, we're finding many 9 to 11-year-old boys are discovering triple X porn. And becoming rather addicted to it.
Mm.
And the catch is there are areas of the brain that don't, sexuality essentially in the brain, there are areas that essentially are behind sexual drive that don't develop the way they're designed to. Meaning these young males do not develop an interest in young females. Okay, so there's no pursuit.
So back to sort of our original question about, or my original question about relationships, the relationship then, the human contact becomes mediated, it's broken down. There is no bridge.
Yeah. And when we kind of talk about older males, I don't know what your audience is and how sexual we can get here, but essentially there's a new erectile dysfunction here, and it has nothing to do with blood flow. So we're not talking about Viagra and Cialis being able to help. It's an arousal template, meaning real females don't do it for males that have had extensive exposure online. Now, there's the other side. I'm talking about the boys. We saw this probably around 10 years ago, and we blamed it all on the music industry.
Right.
You know, when whether it was from, you know, 9 to 15 or so, when very young females were becoming hyper-sexualized, you know, the songs coming out of the jeans,
sure.
and you know, breasts popping out. That wasn't necessarily the music industry. That was that young males weren't looking at young females anymore. So young females had to up their game.
Mm.
Now, I'm all for equality of the sexes, meaning, you know, girls ask guys for dates and guys ask girls for dates. But in terms of, you know, brain wiring, when the sexual pursuit is wired out of males for real females, there's an issue.
Well, it's interesting, too. I don't know if you've ever read John Berger's book, Ways of Seeing, but I don't remember the date on it, but the whole idea of the male gaze and how much of, not everything, but how so much, well, lifestyle advertising for sure, and so much of what we see, so much of the mediated image does seem to come through that, or at least that notion of what the male gaze is supposed to like, right?
Yeah.
What the normal in italics thing is supposed to be. And so so what you're sort of saying, not sort of saying, but what you're saying in the book is that that kids, and particularly boys, are being rewired, in a sense, or predisposed to a very particular image.
Yeah.
Or even, I guess, sadly, almost a particular kind of person, in a way, even though that's not really what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have to backtrack a little bit, though, too, is one of the things in the book is I put this in cultural context.
Mm-hmm.
That we can't blame this all on iTech. There are many other things going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's also culturally dependent. And, you know, some flags that get people very, very angry on both sides. And I'm going to go there at risk of hate mail. you know, You're a young female and a young male, or even older, in an office situation. And how many times can a young male ask a female on a date before she calls it sexual harassment?
Hmm.
Okay, so part of that is yes, we don't want unwanted attention, but on the other hand, if you go to other cultures, if a female doesn't say no three times, then they're not playing the game properly. So, you know, what are the rules of the game? We have to redefine what the rules of the game are.
Well, it's so, you know what's so interesting, too, is I just I interviewed recently Ed Wilson, who's the director of the International Justice Mission, and we were talking about poverty, extreme poverty and violence and the connection. Mm-hmm. And it's all based on a book called The Locust Effect, which essentially says that if personal security isn't attended to in the Global South, then we're never going to be able to deal with, you know, the bigger issues.
Yeah.
And they talk a great deal about gender violence. Mm-hmm. And about gender disparity and, mm-hmm. And how that's pretty much connected to everything. Mm-hmm. And it's so I don't know where you would stand on that, but you know, the White Ribbon Campaign, for instance, Todd Minderson's work in Toronto and what they're trying to do to change boys' attitudes towards women and girls and so on, and at a very young age and to get them more engaged in a conversation and so on, that connected with this whole iTech thing. I mean, mm-hmm. now we're kind of talking, right? It's not an either or distinction.
Well, you want to see gender bias on steroids get into the tech industry,
right?
You know, good old Tech Barbie when she came out. All of the
I don't know what that is.
Feeds on that.
What is Tech Barbie?
Yeah.
What is that? Is that?
Oh,
like
it was actually a Barbie in her old body.
Okay.
Before we had all of the beautiful differences. Body types. And you know, it was blasted online. Please Google it and see what the comments were. It was disgusting.
Wow.
And there's a reason why females aren't in the tech industry as much as they should be. That said, e-literature is a growing field and dominated by females, which is really, really nice. So there are some positives. But going back to game culture, all very, very negative in terms of female stereotypes,
right,
whether it's
right.
body types or
sure.
extreme violent masculinity. It's interesting stuff.
It really is. I mean, interesting. It's disturbing. I mean, it's so many things. And as an older parent with young kids, it's muddy waters is an understatement, right? How do you attend to this? I mean, we got to wrap up the conversation. But I'm hoping we can do a part two. But I do want to say congrats on the book and thank you for the book. And I mean, clearly you're trying to push the dialogue forward. And can I ask you one more question before we?
Absolutely.
Are you hopeful about where we're heading? I mean, I do ask that a lot of people that I talk to, because often there is kind of a doom and gloom like edge to our conversations on my podcast.
The good thing about me is I'm an eternal optimist,
right?
And I'm a therapist by profession. And I will be continuing to write and disseminate this, and I'm overjoyed with the positive response on the book. And again, it's because of the balance. So I think let's keep the middle voice going. Stop being completely pro, completely calm.
Yes.
And keep the middle voice and look at the cultural influences. Like, it's not just about tech. It's about other things happening in our world that are permitting tech to find these, what I refer to as negative niches, as opposed to being used as positive tools. We're going to be okay. But if we stop the dialogue and we just get completely pro, completely con, as with anything else, we're just going to go to war, and there's no good result to war.
Do you have a bumper sticker that says, like, turn off your screen?
I should. I should have a T-shirt. Hey, yes. Let's do that T-shirt.
Hey, let's. I think we have a business. We've got a small business we're developing here. The book is called iMinds: How Cell Phones, Computers, Gaming, and Social Media Are Changing Our Brains, Our Behavior, and the Evolution of Our Species. Dr. Mari Swingle is the author. Check it out online, drmariswingle.com. Thanks so much for your time today. I feel like, talk about scratching the surface. Again, once again, just blown away by the passion and your commitment to the issues and the cause, and I hope we can do part two down the road.
Okay, same here. Thanks for the opportunity to chat.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.